Good evening. It's Sunday, October 29th, 2023. The Palestinian Health Ministry documented more than 7,000 Palestinian deaths, including more than 3,000 children, late last week. Each of the names is reportedly paired with the deceased person's government identification number. President Joe Biden questioned those numbers just a day earlier, saying he had no notion that the Palestinians were telling the truth about the numbers of deceased. Meanwhile, an increasing number of people from across the world and in the United States are taking to the streets and begging for a ceasefire. Today, we'll go in depth with two people who moved to the United States from Jerusalem, one who is a Palestinian Muslim American.
How do you stand up in front of your people that caused the death of a six-year-old and other terrorist attacks that happen in the U.S.? Because you are dehumanizing us. You are showing that the Palestinians and the Muslims and everybody, actually not even just Muslims and Palestinians, everybody who stands with Palestine is being dehumanized.
And one who is an Israeli Jewish American.
I understand that there are rationales for why the United States has taken this approach at this time, but I don't find them rational.
I'm Sharon Sabota, and this is the KPFA Weekend Evening News. In the first segment, we'll go to Oscar Grant Plaza, where more than 1,000 people gathered for a Muslims United for Palestine rally.
My name is Bisan Abu Sharar. I'm originally from Palestine. I was born and raised in Jerusalem, and I live in Pleasant Hill. I'm coming here to support my Palestinian people. My family lives in West Bank, and my brothers-in-law's family lives in Gaza.
How much contact have you had with them since the most recent uprising after October 7th?
So my brother-in-law tries to contact his family every day, but it's not that easy. Sometimes it's every 3 days that he can get a hold of them. His family has left their homes and went to UN schools. The UNRWA has also told them the day before yesterday that 5 of those schools will be bombed. They were threatened by Israel, so they had to leave these schools and try to find other areas to go to. So they're like, their family separated throughout different places, so he tries to contact every one of them to make sure at least that they're alive. Now that's the bare minimum, to just make sure that they're
alive.
There. Yeah, they have lost all their homes because they live close to the border. So all of their homes were bombed and their farms as well.
What are they doing to get by in terms of food, water, fuel,
those things? Everybody is working together to share whatever they have, but a lot of the children are actually dehydrated at this point. My brother-in-law is a doctor, so when he gets the opportunity to see a picture or anything, he can tell from their pictures, the way the children look, that they are completely dehydrated. They don't have any clean water at all at this point. They have water that's I don't know how what the word for it is, but they use the salt water and they clean it, but it's only 70% clean because that's where they're trying to get by, because they don't have fuel to clean the water, so they're trying to get by with whatever they have.
And so if it's salt water, it's not really going to be very hydrating either, right?
No, it's actually very bad for your body, so it's actually working backwards, but that's the only thing they have. And they're bathing and getting they're washing themselves with seawater, which is also salty, so it's really bad. We're talking about long-term effects, health effects that are happening.
Physical health, and then we can only imagine the mental health.
Yeah, we can't
impact.
We're talking about people who've been trying to stay in schools. We're talking about thousands, hundred thousands of people in one school. Like, all the families, and of course the men have already left the schools. They stay on the streets, and only women and children are staying in the school and trying to give them the opportunity, a better opportunity of survival. But mentally wise, like, it's really hard, especially for the kids, because they haven't gotten... He's saying that most of these people have not gotten 2 hours of sleep throughout the nights, every night, because at night is when Israel does more of their bombing, and these kids cannot sleep. Most of them, if you see pictures, even like after they are hit and they are escorted in the ambulances, most of the kids are putting their hands in their ears, because that's how they've been, what they've been doing all night, is just trying to like stay as calm as possible with not listening to all this noise.
And have you been able to stomach mainstream media coverage of this?
It's been very hard. It's been very hard to see the Western perspective, especially at the news, manipulating all the information, you know, growing up there and knowing what, and being a Muslim as well, we do, like, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam taught us, even when you're at war, you are not allowed to kill an elderly, kill a child, destroy a worship place, or hurt a woman. And what they showed in the news, or what they were talked about in the news, is completely opposite of what our teachings are. And I know for sure that our men, or people who are defending our cause, would not do that. And until today, 15, 17, I don't know how many, I lost count of days, 2 weeks in the...
And counting.
In
yeah.
counting, they have not proven any of the claims that they have talked about. So, and the other hand, you have videos that are coming out. Of course, there's no coverage on the Western media of whatsoever. They have no reporters on ground in Gaza. All we see is only Palestinians or reporters, Palestinian reporters, they're using their phones to show us the truth and what is going on. A lot of those reporters have died. At least what's reported until today are 18 reporters have died in the bombings, which is a war crime by itself. Not talking about anything else. And 1,500 kids have been murdered, and we see videos of that. You're talking. Let's pretend that the 40 children are what happened. These 40 children is true. What you're talking about, 1,500 children have been already killed. How many more do they have to kill until we stop this? Like, how many more people need to die? Even if you actually stand with Israel, even if you stand with everything that and condemn Hamas, how many more Palestinians, innocent Palestinians, have to die? How many of this war crime have to happen until somebody says something and stop this? Because they can, if they want to, they can stop this. But they're allowing it to happen every day, in and out. Every hour until today, while we're standing here, they are being bombed. Children are dying.
And you're Palestinian American.
Yes.
So, President Biden, how do you feel like he's doing is representing you as an American?
Well, he's not representing us, for sure. He's not even, like, number one, as a president, like, how do you stand up in front of your people and say a lie? You say in front of all your people, and you say that I saw children being headed, and saying all this information, and then it's translated on the media, and say all of this information that caused the death of a six-year-old and other terrorist attacks that happened in the U.S. because you are dehumanizing us. You are showing that the Palestinians and the Muslims and everybody, actually, not even just Muslims and Palestinians, everybody who stands with Palestine is being dehumanized. They're being attacked every day, being threats, getting threats to lose their job, to lose their house, to lose their anything and everything. And of course he's not presenting us. He's not even, like, empathizing with us. He's dehumanizing us and saying it's okay for us to be killed. It's okay for us to be bombed because Israel is defending itself. It's like us being going through this for the 80 years. We're not allowed to defend itself. After all these deaths, you were talking about almost 5,000 have been killed. Now we're still not allowed to defend ourselves. Now if any Palestinian comes out and does anything to resist this, it's still called terrorist attacks because we're not allowed to defend ourselves, but they are allowed to defend themselves. It doesn't make it. It's so hypocrite. It's unbelievable.
When words like pure evil and things like this are used and maybe conflated into describing a whole group of people, what are your worries?
I am very worried. I thought I live in a really safe neighborhood. My kids go to a really good school. They used to be able to go walk to school. At least I was okay with them going to walk to school, but not anymore, unfortunately, because I don't feel safe anymore. A lot of my friends who wear the hijab, I wear my hijab, I'm proud of it, and I've been wearing it for a very long time. I would never, like, take it off because of any threats, but I know a lot of my friends that have actually thought about taking it off because they are afraid that they'll be attacked just for wearing it.
Because it's a visual representation of your identity.
Yes, and I know that one lady in Bay Area, she was spit on and she was attacked by a man on the street while she was walking her child to school. So now I don't allow my kids, since this started happening 2 weeks ago, I don't let my kids go walk to school anymore, although I live, like, just 5 minutes away from the school because I'm afraid for their safety. I'm afraid for because all my kids are very proud of who they are, and all their friends and everybody at school, they know that they're Palestinian because they talk about it all the time, and I'm just afraid that they'll be attacked just for the pure reason of being Palestinian.
So what are you telling your kids right now to try to give them hope during this kind of dire situation?
It's really hard, but not just for Palestine, for every like human cause and everything that really as a human we need to stand up for. I've always had my kids involved. We always come when Shireen Abu Akleh, the reporter, was shot by the Israeli forces a couple years ago, or even less than yet. It was last year, I think. My kids as well went with us to stand against that. And I've always been very clear with them, talked to them about the history, where this started. It started many, many years ago, and how Palestinians are defending themselves. It's definitely not okay to harm other people. But at the same time, when you are put in a situation that trying to be peaceful is not solving the problem, and you're still being bullied all the time, you need to stand. And I love this myself. I was born and raised in Jerusalem, but when the Israelis built up the walls and they separated West Bank from the Israeli areas, I was kicked out. My family and myself were kicked out of Jerusalem. We had to move to the West Bank because we don't have Israeli IDs. Just because we have Palestinian IDs, we're not allowed to live in the Israeli areas anymore. So we had to be moved out of our area. Although we own that house, this is generations and generations of we inherited this house from our grandparents, and they inherited it from their grandparents.
So settler colonialism has touched your individual family.
Yes, definitely. And one of the, now where we stay in the West Bank, or at least where my family lives right now in the West Bank, the mountain that's really in front of their house is completely, it is a huge settlement. But the land that is built on, it belongs to my father and my grandfather and his grandfather. Mm-hmm. And I have proof of that. They are living and building their settlements on our land without even asking for permission. They took this land from us. They built their settlement, and they put gates where we can't move on their streets. If they decide one day, for their safety or their holiday, whatever reason, they want to close the gates, we can't even move or go to work or go to schools. We have to walk to that gate and get permission to cross it, and then from there get a cab to go to wherever we work. So we can't even use our own cars to move. So it is a colonizing
experience,
yeah.
And this is maybe speculative imagination here, but what's the solution? What do we need to do?
Well, this is a very hard question.
Yes.
Number one, the world, the whole world now, we thought only Israelis to admit of our existence and that we have the right to return. Our great grandparents, our grandparents who were moved out of Palestine in 1948, they have the right to return. All their families have the right to return to their lands. So number one, the whole world needs to recognize that we are a Palestinian people, have the right to go back to our land. We have the right to resist whenever we are being treated in such ways. So to be honest, I don't know the answer right now, but I know that this needs to stop. Number one, they need to really, first of all, cease fire. They need to stop killing people in Gaza like this. People in Gaza do not deserve to live in this camp. I don't want to call it even an open prison, because it's not. It's really a camp, and they are being treated less than what their prime minister said. They are less than animals or less than human. They need to be treated fairly. They need to be treated like humans. They need to have their own land. They need to be able to eat and drink and live their life and leave the camp, the Gaza, and come back whenever they want, and not being controlled like this.
What message would you send to President Biden or even Benjamin Netanyahu?
Well, to President Biden, I would say that he really needs to, first, whenever he comes out and talks about something, he needs to make sure that it's true before he comes out and talks about it, because his word affects a whole community and a whole nation. It's not a word of a person, it's a word of a president. He needs to take that into consideration. When the hospital was bombed, all the media was saying, we have to make sure if it was the Palestinians or the Israelis who bombed. Now they have time to investigate and make sure. But when we're talking about the other side, no, they don't. You just come out and say it as is. So first of all, they need to make sure that the information they are spreading is true. They need to really change this media. The media is being controlled completely by the Zionists, and they're spreading lies, which is causing hatred and more crimes. Definitely they need to work on their media and being truthful to what they believe in, and not just support Israel just because it's Israel or for whatever political reasons behind that. What they are doing right now is just going to cause more harm and more crime.
And then lastly, message for Americans who have no clue what's going on. And
I think they need to educate themselves. I don't think right now at this time of our lives, like in 2023, there's no excuse for anybody to say this is what we see on the media. That now it's not your only resource of information. A lot. We're talking about thousands of people who believe the media, but then for some reason in their heart, when they saw the pictures in Gaza, what's coming out from Gaza, they decided to look for the truth. And then when they went out and looked for it, they found it. It's really easy to find. You can find it online. You can find it in books. It's not hard. You can just, it's not complicated like everybody says. It's very simple. You can just find it.
And what gives you hope yourself? Do you still have hope?
Yes, definitely. I have a lot of hope. Number one, and I know that not everybody that in here is a Muslim, but as Muslims, we believe that God is always going to be with those who are righteous, and we know that we are on the righteous path. And also, even if I wasn't a Muslim, even if I have a lot of Christian friends, I grew up going to Christian schools. We also believe that if you are on the righteous path, history has proven that it will always come to that the righteous people will actually win, because it is always going to be a fight between the righteous and the evil, but you just have to fight for what you believe is true.
Anything else you want to add?
I'd like to add that we're very grateful for people who are supporting Palestine, for people who are looking for the truth, who are seeking the truth, and then standing with the truth. I really am grateful for a lot of my American friends who are sitting here with us. And I know that when we all fight for this, for the what's righteous, we will eventually be heard, and this will stop.
You're listening to the Weekend Evening News on KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno, K248BR 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. I'm Sharon Sabota. In the second and final segment for today, we'll hear the perspective of a Jewish American who participated in the Jewish Voice for Peace rally in Washington, D.C.
Hi, I'm Ben Mansky. I'm Assistant Professor of Public Sociology at George Mason University and Director of Next System Studies. And I am somebody who grew up largely in Wisconsin, but we moved to Wisconsin from Jerusalem in 1983. As a child, I lived in Jerusalem from 1977 to 1982 with my family. I am a Jew. I am active in the movement for democracy and social justice and ecology in the United States and around the world. And as part of that, I've been active around the struggle for Palestinian self-determination and Palestinian freedom as a Jew who is concerned about the safety and the rights of the Palestinian people and also of Israeli Jews.
I'd love to just kind of begin by kind of your take on the situation that we're in right now and the narrative that we're able to access in mainstream media.
It's certainly true that the most belligerent voices are the ones that are most amplified. And what we don't hear from are the voices of Palestinian Arabs and Israeli Jews who have been working together and struggling together for a just and peaceful outcome to this long conflict, to an end to the occupation, an end to apartheid in Israel, and in the very immediate term, to a ceasefire so that children and so many innocent people in Gaza and also in the West Bank are not murdered as a result of the bloodthirsty approach of belligerents, both among Israeli Jews and also in the case of Hamas and Islamic Jihad. So that my perspective is that the voices that matter the most, the voices that I pay the most attention to, are the ones that we need to bring forward most directly. For me, that means making the work of Hadash and Ayman Odeh, who's been a leader of Hadash, members of the Israeli Knesset, who are Palestinian Arab citizens of Israel, who have been working in the only binational party that exists in that region, a party of both Palestinian Arabs and Israeli Jews working in not just coalition, but in the same organization.
The organization
yeah,
is called Hadash. Continue with your narrative,
sure.
but also just give us a little more context about Hadash.
Sure, absolutely. Hadash is a political party. It's also a social movement organization, Democratic Front for Peace and Equality. And it itself, like various left-wing political parties in various countries, is a coalition of different forces. So at the core of Hadash is the Communist Party in Israel, Makid, which goes back to the years before 1947, 1948, and has been organized in Israel-Palestine since the very beginning, since the beginning of communist parties anywhere. So it has always been a binational party. At various points, it has had greater strength among Israeli Jews. It did in the 1940s and in the 1950s. And there was always a substantial portion of Jewry within Israel-Palestine that was anti-Zionist and was not on board with the project of a quote-unquote Jewish state, a Jewish homeland, perhaps, but not a Jewish state. And what we've seen in recent years is that Hadash seems to have been rejuvenated as the contradictions of the Zionist project have become impossible for many young Israelis to escape. And many Israelis, not enough, but many have had to come to terms with the fact that a democratic and a Jewish state cannot coexist. You cannot have an ethno-national state and also have that state be a democracy for all the people who live under the jurisdiction and governance of that state. And so there has been some growth in support for Hadash. And in fact, at one point, very briefly, Ayman Odeh was the leader of the official opposition in the Knesset. There's very little to be happy about at the moment, but I've been happy to see that his voice and the voices of Israeli Jews and Palestinian Arabs and Hadash and also in social movement organizations that are part of the anti-occupation bloc in Israeli society have begun to get more attention. This morning, Odeh had an opinion piece in the New York Times, which I strongly recommend to everybody to read. I really think in the long run, the only way forward that leads to genuine peace and security for anyone in the region is a path that involves moving beyond nationalisms and moving forward with a commitment to the universal rights of all people who make that region their home.
What would it look like to get beyond this sort of nationalistic approach that has been in the region for so long?
Well, I think that the joint work creates the possibilities, right? And also, so it's, for any social movement that's working to transform society, there is always a relationship between what's happening internally in the movement and the external conditions, right? And so, as I was saying just now, the internal work is happening within the movement, and our job, I think, is to strengthen it, right? We can't control everything that's happening externally, but whatever we can do to strengthen the movement that takes us in the direction that we actually want to go, we should. So that means doing what you're doing right now by bringing visibility to the work that people are doing who are on the front lines. It means providing aid in the source of in the form of resources. It means taking action when that's called for. So those are some of the things that we can do. And I've certainly been doing some of that work in the sense that as somebody who was born in the United States, but who thought of himself as Israeli for many years, because I was a kid, I'm a very passionate person. I wanted to fly F-15s in the IDF. I wanted just because they were cool, not because I wanted to hurt anybody. But who comes out of that, but then who moved back to the U.S. and who has been involved in organizations like Jewish Voice for Peace at their founding meeting as a delegate, and who has been involved in the movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions from the get-go, bringing the Green Party of the United States into that movement. It was the first major national organization in the United States to support BDS. what that has meant for me has been that I have come into, you know, joint struggle, joint work with Palestinians and Palestinian Americans. And so we can do that, and many Jews and Palestinians are doing that, and many allies are doing that here in the United States. And that's important. And that work is also happening in Israel, Palestine. And so that's the internal work to the movement from my perspective. The external is to some extent beyond our control. But I do think that the conditions that Israelis have been facing make the possibilities for the movement greater, right? So there has been this democracy movement, so-called, in the streets of Israel for months. It was going on right up until October 7th, with hundreds of thousands of Israelis in the streets all over the country on a daily and weekly basis, struggling against the attempts by the right wing in Israel to turn Israel into a Jewish theocracy and a full-fledged patriarchy. And that movement in the streets had forced a lot of, let's call them liberal and centrist Israelis, secular Israelis, in their context, to come to terms with the fact that the things they were demanding for are things that have been denied to their Palestinian neighbors. And so that's a, in some ways can be thought of as, you know, an external set of conditions that opened up the possibilities for people to change what they thought it was that they were fighting for. And so I think, you know, the fact that we are even right now on a daily basis hearing reports of demonstrations calling for ceasefire in Jerusalem, in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, in other parts of Israel, is to some extent an outgrowth of the fact that that process was going on already. When BDS came to the Palestinian struggle as a strategy, was something that I could immediately see as a positive alternative. I certainly knew many Jews who supported BDS from the get-go, but I also didn't understand why so many liberal Jews were so opposed to it. To me, here we had a nonviolent strategy for an end to the occupation and for the guarantee of Palestinian rights that was consistent with the same kinds of strategies that so many of us have engaged in around our work in solidarity with the people of Colombia, the people of South Africa, the people of East Timor, the people of Tibet. So why would we not adopt BDS in that case for the people of Palestine and the Palestinian diaspora? To me, work on BDS is actually probably the best thing that anybody can do to further the kind of positive human rights-centered universalist vision that we need if we're going to have a positive outcome.
What, right, from your perspective, does the United States gain from this seemingly never-ending conflict or decades-long conflict? And why do you speculate that we're taking this approach at this time?
If I was to try to explain Biden's actions politically, and I have a history in electoral politics with the Greens, as I mentioned, it's hard for me to understand what he thinks he's doing at this point. I can't explain it politically, but I would just say that there's certainly a very long history to this relationship with Israel, in which very few American leaders have provided the kind of check that would be necessary for Israel to move in a different direction. If Biden was truly concerned with standing by Israel and Israeli society, he would not be providing the kind of unchecked support to the Netanyahu government. That does not help to advance the cause of peace, and it also does not do anything to support the movement for a more democratic society within Israel.
That's it for this evening's news. Thanks to Rada Kiel, our technical producer, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. Remember, you can always pledge securely online at kpfa.org to support KPFA's listener-sponsored radio. I'm Sharon Sabota. Good evening.